More questions on being a mother today. Welcome as we have another look into the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot, who called us to live to a higher standard each day. As our series continues in the coming weeks, we'll hear from family, from friends, from others who were influenced by Elizabeth's life and message. Hey, thanks for taking time to join us again today. Or maybe it's your first time visit. Thanks for coming along. Well, let's look at what we can expect today. As usual, we'll have two Gateway to Joy programs. Our short series, a five-part series, Questions on Mothering, continues with parts 3 and 4 today. Disciplining Your Child and Training Your Child are the two main topics. We'll hear from Mary Lou McCauley, whose husband Ed was one of those killed in Operation Alka. And we'll also hear from Johnny Erickson Tata and what she thinks it's important for people to know about Elizabeth Elliot. Right now, though, part 3 of Questions on Mothering. Joining Elizabeth today is Shelley Russell, the mother of a 1-year-old. Hey, what about this business of spanking? Is it abuse? Shelley, a victim of abuse herself, has a question about that. And think with us today about why parents get so angry and out of control. What could they do to help avoid getting to that point? Disciplining Your Child, Shelley Russell and Elizabeth Elliot. Questions on Mothering, Part 3.
This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot talking again today on the subject of child training with my friend Shelley Russell, mother of a 1-year-old. Shelley, what's your question today?
Well, I would like to discuss spanking a little bit more in detail. When I hear the word spanking, it just makes me hurt inside to know that I love this little girl so much and that I would actually spank her.
Physically assault her, is that what it seems like to you?
Yes, yes. And the other thing is that we've heard so much about child abuse today and people getting so angry that they abuse their child, or families and people that have been accused of child abuse who have not abused their child but have just spanked their child to raise them correctly.
You were the victim of child abuse yourself, right?
Right.
When you were growing up. So you have very powerful emotional reactions to the whole idea of any kind of physical punishment, right?
Right.
Well, this may sound paradoxical, and I guess in a sense it is, but I really do believe that one of the primary reasons for child abuse is the failure to discipline. And I mean by discipline that has got to include spanking. Now, I want again to try to calm my listeners' fears, because I've talked about this subject many times before. When I say spanking, I'm not talking about abuse. There is a world of difference between a controlled measure of pain inflicted on a little child by a mother or father who is totally calm and totally in control of himself or herself. The reason that so many parents get so angry and out of control is because they haven't started to train the child at the beginning. And by the time you've had to scream at your child 5 times, put that down, come here, don't do that, you're angry, right?
Right.
By that time, your ire is up and your temperature is rising so that you can't deal with the child except in an abusive way. Even if it's not a physically abusive way, you're going to be screaming at that child. And a woman came to me and she told me, I discovered, because my children told me, that I was screaming at them practically all the time. She said, I realized that I had grown up in a house where everybody screamed at everybody. And she said, I didn't even know I was doing it. And it wasn't until my children were about 8 or 9 years old that they began to say, Mom, you scream at us all the time. And she said, I began to try to listen to myself. Okay, let's take your little child, Julia. You go to a friend's house, and your friend has all sorts of nice little knickknacks around that Julia's never seen before. She wants to touch him. What are you going to do with her?
Well, I would probably say no. And then if she went to touch it again, I would probably say no again. And I would continue to say no because I wouldn't want my friend to think that I was harsh with my daughter by saying no once and then spanking her.
And what happens to the conversation with your friend that you went to see while you're saying no to Julia five times? Conversation just falls apart, doesn't it?
Exactly.
I couldn't tell you how many times I've been in situations where the purpose of the visit was adult conversation, but there was a child that completely disintegrated all possibility of adult exchange. Obviously, when you go to your friend's house, that is not the place to start with disciplining Julia. As we were saying the other day, you need not to childproof your house, but to have certain things that Julia must not touch. One of the things my mother observed was that children are very often much happier with the measuring cups and the pots and pans in the kitchen than they are in expensive toys. Now, I grew up in the Depression. My parents didn't have the money to buy expensive toys. There were six children in the family. We played with maybe one or two dolls, one or two cars, and the rest of the time, we played with pots and pans and sieves, and my mother would let us use the metal colander or the sieve or the measuring cups to play with, and we had to learn to put them back. And those were not no-nos. They were without permission, and one of the things that Julia needs to learn is, may I? Now, she's not talking yet, is she? Does she say anything at all?
Dead-end mama.
Dead-end mama.
That's about it.
Okay, but you need to start training her at home, and that brings up the question that you've already raised, the question of spanking. By spanking, you are giving the child a message that the child understands. You cannot reason with an 8-month-old crawling baby. But the child understands the word no. They understand that word long before you think they do. I think they understand it when they're in their crib, maybe about 2 months, maybe a month. When they're screaming in the crib, you can pat them and tell them you love them and say, now it is time to go to sleep and I want you to be quiet. Now, of course, they don't understand those words, but they understand the calm, loving tone of your voice. And it's extremely important that you get Julia's attention, you look her straight in the eye, and you call her by name. And when she touches the thing that she's not to touch, you say, Julia, no. And if she persists in touching it, then I think it's time to administer a spanking. That doesn't mean a beating, and I would never use the word hit. Don't ever slap your child in the face. Don't ever use your hand for punishment, because I think your hand should be an instrument of love and tenderness and stroking. But it is a good thing to have a small switch, just a little branch off the bush in the backyard, or maybe a paint stick, and you take the child's little bare legs, and you whack those little bare legs, or you take the little tiny hand and you whack the palm of the hand, not the back of the hand. The bones on the back of the hand are more delicate. But it doesn't take much of a swat with a paint stir or with a little switch to make a little child cry. You don't want to inflict real harm, of course, and you won't if you're still under control. If you give the command five times, what's the message you're giving Julia?
That she can do it, and I will just continue to say no. That I'm really not going to do anything to alter her actions.
What are you telling her about the first five times?
That she can do it five times.
That they don't have to pay attention. That
right.
You don't mean what you say. You are training that child not to pay attention.
You know, last night I was at a friend's, and we were discussing spankings, and my girlfriend, who she's a wonderful mother and she loves being a mother, really hates to use the word punishment or discipline. She prefers to use teach and train. And so we were discussing spankings and how to discipline our children. They're both 1 year old. And she said that she believes that you just continue to say no, and her little son loves to climb up on chairs and then on the table and just to say no. And she says that some days she says no 70 times, but that she believes, as she continues to say no, that one day it will click that he is not supposed to do that. And that instead of spanking him, she actually will distract him with something else, but distract him each time he does it.
But he's not getting the lesson. He is not getting the message when she's distracting him. All she's doing is taking his attention off the thing that he wants. How many adults are there going around in the world today who have never learned to say no to themselves because nobody has ever said no to them? Anytime their parents wanted to get their attention away from the thing that they wanted, they gave them something else which was equally or even more interesting. That is not a way of getting across the message. There are things in this world you may not do. There are things in this world you may not have. And this is a family, this is our home, and we have to live together. I can't do everything I want to do when I want to do it. Daddy can't do everything Daddy wants to do when Daddy wants to do it. We have to give and take. We have to say no to ourselves. And in order to teach the child to say no to herself, you are going to have to say no to the child, just the way the Lord did. The Lord, in His mercy, gives us commands and shows us where the lines are drawn. My father always said, wherever the line is drawn is where the battle will be drawn up with the child. When you move the line, when you shift the boundaries, the battle shifts. Nothing else is accomplished. Why would the mother put herself through saying no 70 times when you only have to say it once and give a little tiny spanking and the child has got the message?
It makes so much sense when you're talking about it, but I just think we want to be such good parents and we're so afraid of being harsh. And yet it makes so much sense because I think our culture is saying not to say no to ourselves and that really we're teaching them godly principles and we don't want to teach them like the rest of the world is living, but we want our children to grow up to live differently.
Thank you, Shelley Russell. And we'll be back with Shelley again with some more questions.
Questions on Mothering, Part 3, Disciplining Your Child with Shelley Russell and Elizabeth Elliott. Well, speaking of mothering, Mary Lou McCauley had three children. Mary Lou's husband, Ed, was one of the five missionaries killed in Operation Alka. Here's Mary Lou from a 1962 record album produced by Nancy Wolnow, The Alka Story.
In the year 1956, I often used the words of the gospel song, Submission, to express my testimony. The path that I have trod has brought me nearer God, though it has led through sorrow's gates. Though not the way I'd choose, in my way I might lose the joy that yet for me awaits. Now, 6 years later, these words have even more significance for me. I am fully aware that this is not the way that I as a human being would choose. My spiritual nearsightedness makes the present seem more important than eternity. And many times if I could have changed the circumstances, I would have taken the easier way, thoughtlessly forfeiting the lessons and experiences of God's way. And so I am grateful that the Lord Himself has ordered my life for me. Choose for us, God, nor let our weak preferring cheat us of good Thou hast for us designed. Choose for us, God, Thy wisdom is unerring, and we are fools and blind. I also like this by Amy Carmichael, which has been a help to me. If I make much of anything appointed, magnify it secretly to myself or insidiously to others, if I let them think it hard, if I look back longingly upon what used to be and linger among the byways of memory so that my power to help is weakened, then I know nothing of Calvary love.
Mary Lou McCauley, whose husband Ed was one of those killed in Operation Alka. Later on, we hear from Johnny Erickson Tata, but right now we go to part four of Questions on Mothering, Training Your Child. Shelley Russell, who's been joining us for the series, has a one-year-old child. What do you do with a young child known for fussing or throwing tantrums? And what about a child working around the house? Is 1 year old too young?
Well, I'm wondering, how do you deal with fussing and throwing tantrums? Most books say that there is a period of time where children go through throwing tantrums, and that children need to express their anger, and we shouldn't squelch it, but they need to learn to express their feelings.
One thing we want to be careful about is that we're not contributing to our child's anger. And I think when you're calm and pleasant and loving with your child and treating him in a matter-of-fact way, you're not going to cause nearly as much anger in him as when you are frustrated and helpless. The child needs the security of knowing that his mother is in charge. Now, certainly not all children throw tantrums, but my mother, who had six, had, I think, only one out of six who would literally throw himself on the floor and bang his head on the floor. And interestingly, that was her first child, and it might just be because he did sense that he might get something out of that. She probably learned some things. And one of the things that she learned was that he was not very interested in carrying on a tantrum if there was no audience. He was immediately put into what she called the crying room, which was just a little sort of a pantry. And he was told that he could stay there until he could come out with a nice face. And sometimes I remember hearing my mother say to my younger brother and sisters, "We don't like that face. And you can go to your room until you find a nice face, and then you can come back." Now, when the child is 6 or 7 months old, if he throws a tantrum, the main thing is to let him see that he will not gain anything by that. He's not going to get what he wants by throwing a tantrum. If you do what he's wanting, then you have encouraged, you have reinforced that kind of behavior.
Okay, now with my daughter being one, and I've noticed that I've done some things that have really contributed to her being more fussy, and I want to change that behavior. And there's so many different techniques that people have given me. One is not paying attention to her. Another is paying attention or not paying attention to her for maybe 10 minutes and then bending down and showing her that I love her, and then getting up after 5 minutes and doing what I need to do, and then bending down again after 10 minutes.
And we're assuming that she's crying all during this time, except when you're bending down and paying attention to her.
Exactly, because she wants to have my attention. What would you suggest now that she is one, and I really do want to teach her not to fuss, and that is an appropriate way to really deal with her young life?
That is a tough question, and I'm not sure I have the answer, Shelley, but I do believe that if you just institute a new program of helping her to see that she is not going to gain what she wants by the fussing, it may take you as much as a week of agonies, you and John having to control yourselves and just let her cry it out. And it's so important that you speak in a loving, calm, quiet tone, but letting her know by looking her straight in the eye and saying, "No, I do not want you to cry. Julia, I want you to stop crying. I want you to stop crying." And if she persists in crying, then maybe she needs to be put either in her crib or in a room by herself. Now, she may throw a tantrum. You've got to show her in every way that you can, short of complying with whatever it is she's demanding at that point. And I think what she mainly is demanding now, because she has become accustomed to this, is your attention. And you're just going to have to let her know that you are going to do these other things now. By all means, bring Julia into your housework as much as you can. If you're going to be cleaning the bathroom, show her where the cleanser thing is and ask her to get it out and give it to you. And then you give it to her and tell her to put it back. And if you're washing dishes, you can give her the silverware and tell her to where to put it in the drawer. Give her a little stool to climb up on and tell her to put the spoons back. Well, she'll put the spoon in where the forks are, and you say, "No, that's a fork. This is a spoon. Put the fork with the fork and the spoon with the spoon." She will learn that so fast. And the more meaningful work you give her, and the more opportunity she sees of you actually doing work in a happy and methodical way, the more you will be teaching her.
So this whole idea of your child working alongside of you and teaching them to work, you've mentioned that you think that can start at a very young age, and it does seem odd to me. And just when you mentioned to me having your child put the silverware away, here we give them toys where they have to stick a circle in the circle slot and a triangle in the triangle slot, and we're actually having them help us by sticking a spoon in the spoon slot and a knife in the knife slot and a fork in a fork slot. That's so interesting to me, and I'm just wondering, what age can they begin to help you, and then how do you think up ideas of ways in which they can help you?
I think the Lord will help you think up ideas, but I think Julia is not too young to start, and real work, real housework, involves constantly keeping things in order, and one of the things that she can do right now is to put her shoes in the closet, to pick up her clothes, to bring things to you. Don't be afraid to ask your child to do things. You know, go and get the wastebasket, empty the wastebasket, take the papers out of the wastebasket, put them here, pick up her own clothes, put away her toys. If you're going to let her open the kitchen drawer and take out the measuring cups or the bowls, she can play with them for a certain length of time, and her attention span is probably very short, although it's amazing how they can be absorbed with something simple like that rather than a toy for a long time. Then she will go to something else. You call her back and say, Julia, put the cups back in the drawer. Put the cups back in the cupboard. You'll be amazed at how she knows exactly where those cups belong. And she will be so happy to do something which is really useful. She will begin to see your pleasure, and she will begin to learn to take joy in real work. She can learn to start making her bed when she's about four or five years old. And I know 10-year-old kids that are not required to make their own beds. I think that's pitiful.
It sounds very exciting to me to really have my daughter working alongside of me and just accomplishing something that needs to get done anyways.
Sure, why not make it useful? Do you enjoy Julia?
Most of the time I do enjoy her. At times I get rather frustrated, but I do enjoy her. And I'm just wondering about that. We are so consumed sometimes with raising our child properly and reading books and trying to think about her actions and how we want to raise her, that sometimes the enjoyment goes out of it because we just want to do everything so right, so perfectly.
That is a danger. And when we start talking about discipline, then people begin to think we must be the world's most cruel parents. Discipline is the greatest kindness. The Lord disciplines us because he loves us. And Irma Bombeck wrote at least an article, I'm not sure whether she even wrote a book, called I Loved You Enough to Say No. And we've got to love our children enough to deliver them from themselves. We're all born selfish, and we need all the help we can get to start thinking about other people. Of course, a baby has nothing to think about but himself. When he's born, he's hungry, he needs to sleep, he needs to be dry, he needs to be taken care of physically, and that's all he can think about. He begins on the first day to realize that those needs are met by this person who turns out to be mother. And from that day on, the mother has the job of helping the child to see that the entire universe does not revolve around him, but that his needs are going to be met, that he does not need to worry about that, because they're going to be met by somebody who loves him more than anybody else in the whole world, and by somebody who is going to take care of him and make sure that everything's fine. The insecurity of the child usually comes from the insecurity of the mother. And when the mother is calm and confident and trusting in the Lord and asking for the Lord's wisdom, I really do believe that the child senses this, and he is going to know that his mother does love him.
What is really challenging me is that sometimes as mothers, we do try to be perfect, and we also try to meet all the demands that the world is putting on us to keep a perfect house, to be fabulous cooks, to have wonderful kids, to be perfectly dressed. And we leave the Lord out of our lives. And it's just really challenging me to make it so that the Lord is the focus of our lives and keep out the world and not keeping ourselves so busy that we forget what our priority is, and to be quiet before the Lord, waiting upon Him to lead us instead of immediately running to a book and saying, now how can I deal with this? And I need a quick answer because I don't have time.
Shelley, it's heartening to me to see a young woman who is earnest about really wanting the Lord's help. Thanks for being with me.
Questions on Mothering, Part 4, Training Your Child. Author, speaker, and ministry leader, Johnny Erickson Tata. Johnny, what's important for people to know about your friend, Elizabeth Elliot?
You know, nowadays we're in a different era than in the late 1950s when Elizabeth was catapulted into fame. And I don't know, I think many young people just don't recognize the name of Elizabeth Elliot nowadays. The younger generation lives in an egalitarian culture where, stamp of Christ or not, leaders that most young people look up to, I think they lack heroic qualities. Courage in people and in leaders is rare, and good character is rarer still. To even use the term moral purity nowadays sounds terribly old-fashioned. And I don't know, I think a lot of young people just think suffering should be done away with at all costs. Even good Christians think that. And if suffering can't be avoided, then I think a lot of people feel it should be drugged, divorced, escaped from, prayed away. But in this age of anti-heroes, I do think people still want to see integrity and authenticity in others, no matter what age you are. Even Christians long to see a follower of Jesus really square off against sin, you know, stand firm in adversity. We all want to see someone in whom living for Christ doesn't look any different than dying for Him. Nowadays, I do think people are craving a visceral story that's got meat on it, a story that rises above the average, that soars and inspires. And it's why I still recommend, and I often give away books by Elizabeth Elliot to young readers. I think it's so important for their sakes, for their soul's sake, that they come to know Elizabeth Elliot intimately.
Ministry leader, author, and speaker Johnny Erickson Tata. Well, as our time comes to an end, let me thank you for letting us come into your home, your office, maybe along with you as you took a drive, wherever we found you. On behalf of the Elizabeth Elliot Foundation, in cooperation with the Bible Broadcasting Network, let me invite you to check out elizabethelliot.org. More talks, devotionals, videos, and more, elizabethelliot.org. And if you get a chance, leave a review for us. Thanks. Until next time, may God remind you each and every day, you are loved with an everlasting love, and underneath are those everlasting arms